The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon and welcome back. Today is Thursday, 20th day of September, 2012. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow down 10, S&P down 3, comp down by 10, gold down 70 cents, oil up 27 cents, and Trulia had their IPO today and they're up $7.23. The chart I have up on the screen is the S&P 500 E-mini futures. It is not the hourly chart I normally have up. This is a smaller time frame, the 10,000 contract chart. I have it up because I want to show those that were in the live trading room this morning. Right here, we talked about the MA1 coming down, okay, and we had had a long trade here that was taken off for reasons that we explained in the room. And then we were right here, and I said, now, if we get a close back above the MA1, okay, you could consider being long at 14.50-50, okay, if we get a close back above the MA1. And as you can see, that did work out nicely. Put 2 points on the board with that trade. Now, here's the thing. We had good reason to believe that there could be potential failure here. So we were able to mitigate the risk and say, okay, we'll let the market prove itself. Once it proves itself, then we'll participate. Okay? And so There was a little bit of a drawdown, about a point drawdown in the trade, and then it went right up and took out this swing high right here. So, continuing to march. Let's go look at the hourly chart. For those of you that were tuned in at the end of the show yesterday, I had a trend line on my chart. I said, I don't even remember why I have this particular trend line on my chart. But I'm going to show you a little magic, and I'm just going to extend it to the right. I extended it to the right. And remember yesterday I said that in extending it, I thought it was going to hit this bottom right here. But it did this. And I said, you know what? I'll just leave it because it will become meaningful at some point anyway. And although it missed touching it by, I don't know, a tick or two ticks, look at this bullish candle this morning. Now, we spent on the hourly. Let me back up. Here's what we've done this week. Here's the Globex Open Sunday night. On Monday, we hit the upper weekly zone at 57.58. Then came down Tuesday to 48.49, weekly trading zone. Wednesday, up here for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 hours. Sold off, bounced back up, 1, 2, 3, 4 hours. Worked our way back down overnight to the weekly trading zone at 48.49, where we spent 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 hours. And out of 11 hours, this is the one candle right here that really stood out. We talked about it this morning in the live trading room. Hey, that's a long-legged doji. It's right at a weekly trading zone. It had a blue MA1 up underneath it. And that's a pretty good indication to expect higher prices. Now, on some other time frames and using some other stuff, we know that we have, you know, some things to get through to work our way back up to the top. There is some overhead pressure. But from this doji to where we are now, pretty nice little move. So if you were in there with us in the live trading room, you were able to take part in that, congratulations, good for you. And if not, then another trade will come along. It's just that in today's markets, it may not come along quite as quickly as it used to. Hello, Robin Dane out there in the audience. Hello to you. We missed you as well. Glad to have you back. I'll fire your mic up here in just a minute. I want to talk about Greece. You know, the Draghi did his thing, then the Fed did their thing, and that was supposed to make the world a better place. And it may. Who knows? But there's still a lot of talk about Greece may still exit the Eurozone. Now, when you hit hard times, it's time to pawn or part with the family silver, okay? The family jewels, whatever you have. And an unprecedented clear out is now underway in Athens. When this whole Greece thing started, if you guys go back and listen to the podcast, I talked about this for days on end. And you can, not that going to hear it's not going to help you any, because I said it back then. And then it doesn't make me smart because I said it. It was just so obvious. As Greece began to fall apart, I said some of the greatest bargains that people will ever find on planet Earth will be found in Greece. That, you know, out of every tragedy comes opportunity. It's just the way the world works. And I said it doesn't make you evil or bad if you are able to somehow take advantage of the opportunities that do spring up in Greece as a result of how the government has mismanaged their economy. Now remember, it wasn't the people of Greece that did this. It was their government. And the people of Greece, that's one of the reasons they're so upset, is because their own government sold them out. Kind of like our government's doing us here right now, but we'll save that for another time. Greece has announced that it will sell anything it can do without. In the case of the debt-choked nation, that means letting go of islands, royal palaces, prime real estate, marinas, airports, roads, the state-owned gas company, the lottery, the post office, anything that they can sell. They're going to sell it. On Wednesday, the nation learned the downsizing would also include diplomatic residences abroad, starting with the Victorian townhouse that was once the Greek consul general's residence in London. Gregory Dalavakura's spokesman at the foreign ministry said, there is a decision to lease and sell properties that for various reasons are not being used. The foreign ministry's finance department said he was hard at work evaluating market conditions. Now, the sell-off emerged just a day after Athens' finance minister revealed what most Greeks feared but had not been officially told, that with national income projected to fall 25% by the year 2014, their economy is not just shrinking, but slipping inexorably into a 1930s-style depression. And officials are now working frantically to get the mother of all fire sales off the ground. For potential buyers of ambassadorial homes and consuls' quarters, the good news is that the foreign ministry is fully aware of what and where the properties are, unlike the Greek state, which until recently was struggling to attain an inventory of what it actually owned given the lack of a proper land registry. High-end estate agents are already being sounded out to sell the 10,000-square-foot consular residence in London's upscale Holland Park, which is currently being renovated. Property experts say homes similar to the 115-year-old stucco-fronted townhouse fetch rents of around $25,000 a week, and that's pounds, I believe, and could sell for as much as $12 million. Richard Branson is a neighbor. He put his own home on the market last year for £17 million. Now, since the outbreak of Greece's great economic crisis in late 2009, the country's diplomatic presence abroad, like so much else, has been dramatically scaled back as governments have sought to rake in expenditure. Now, this is not just the government selling off everything. The UK residents, another UK resident, Constantine, the former king of Greece, officials have also let slip that Tatoi Palace, the royal family's historic estate at the foot of Mount Parnitha, will be sold off too. There's no way to make this good news, and I won't attempt to, but I will say this, that out of this tragedy, fortunes will be made, opportunities are there, and it'll be interesting to see how history not only writes itself over the coming years, but how history remembers this time, and you know, maybe you're not up for buying a consul's mansion next to Richard Branson, but maybe a little restaurant overlooking the Aegean Sea at an affordable price. Very affordable. You know, that eventually things will sort themselves out. Eventually the economy will turn around, but right now bargains abound, and there's a lot of people there that need jobs. So if you go there and buy a business that's gone out of business or is going out of business, and you're able to keep that business afloat, and you're able to hire employees, create jobs, you've not done a bad thing. You've done a very good thing. So, world of opportunity, I encourage everyone to take a look at that. All right. The other thing I need to tell you, if you're using Internet Explorer, you need to stop. Microsoft issued a warning yesterday that everyone using Internet Explorer should stop. They've got the fix, and it's going to be released Friday, but I won't go into all the details. But you, if you're using Explorer, stop. Go get Firefox, get Chrome. It's free. I will post an article on the blog. Actually, I'll put a link to the article in the chat room because there's a fix you can do now. Michael, you did the fix last night, correct?
I did.
You did.
I did.
So Michael's already done the fix. The fix will be available to everybody on Friday. It'll, in fact, tonight, overnight, for those of you that have your Windows machines set up to automatically update, it will get that new update tonight. But in the meantime, use Chrome, use Firefox, use Opera. Now, this comes from Microsoft. And when Microsoft says don't use our browser, it's a pretty serious issue. iOS 6 came out yesterday, and people are not happy. Apple Maps. Well, it was announced back in June that Apple would stop using Google Maps when it came out with iOS 6 and use its own system, which was created using data from navigation specialist TomTom. Some of you may have a TomTom in your car. But people are really upset over the new maps. They are terrible. Among user complaints regarding Apple's maps sent to the BBC, some towns appear to be missing, such as Stratford-upon-Avon and Solihull. I mean, they're just not there. Others, like Uckfield and East Sussex, are in the wrong location. Satellite images of various locations, particularly in Scotland, are obscured by clouds. And there's even an airport where there isn't one. So, and it's not just the Maps app that people are upset about. It's the Apps app, the App Store, where you go to the App Store and you browse for apps. I haven't used it yet, and I haven't downloaded, but I've seen the screenshots, and it's going to be a grueling process for you to go through and find quality apps. They're going to have to fix this, and I'm sure they will, because they don't want to lose revenue. Good news for Facebook, maybe. They have a new revenue stream. Unfortunately, they're chasing the Groupon revenue model. And we spent a lot of time yesterday talking about Groupon, which is the stock's down 80% off its IPO price. And we talked at length about the business model and why, you know. But, so now Facebook has said that it will start charging businesses to run offers on its social network, turning a previously free service into a potential revenue generator at a time when Wall Street is demanding new sources of growth and profit from the company. Facebook launched Facebook Offers earlier this year, letting retailers and other local merchants send deals to their Facebook fans. Users claim the offers from their news feeds and redeem the vouchers at stores to get discounts. The service has been free, but in coming weeks, Facebook will require merchants to pay at least $5 on related ads to promote each Facebook offer to a targeted audience of fans and friends of fans. The cost will vary based on the size of a company's Facebook pages. Since Facebook went public in May, the company has been under pressure from Wall Street to show how it can turn its giant social network into a money machine. Facebook shares have lost about 40% of their value since the IPO. And so now they're going to chase a business model that their shares have lost 80% since their IPO. The commerce potential of Facebook, known as F-commerce, has yet to materialize, partly because retailers have been able to feast on a host of free tools on the social network to attract customers. In the past, some Facebook offers have not been relevant to all users, partly because some people saw deals in their news feeds from merchants located far away, and so it wasn't relevant. That will be fixed. Facebook is also adding barcodes for offers so that customers can redeem the offers more easily. The barcodes do work globally. Facebook said it is very happy with the success of its offers business so far. We don't have any dollar figures yet on what sort of revenue it's going to generate. And so, again, they have to do something. They've done something. Time will tell if it was the right thing to do. And I'll show you one other thing, and then Michael can show you the recap. Since we're talking cell, we talk a lot about cell phones on this show, or the iPhone. Here's the original iPhone. Remember him? Remember this movie? This phone right here, the brick, it was the Dynatac 8000X. It weighed 2 pounds. Imagine a 2 pound cell phone. And it cost $4,000.
Looked pretty good back then, though, didn't it?
It did. There's Radio Shack. Had a $800 model back in 1989. This young man was talking on a Radio Shack phone. These are all old commercials. Nokia unveiled the Talkman in 1984. It weighed 10 pounds, gave 1 hour of talk time, 10 hours of standby. And maybe I'll put this in the show notes and you guys can watch these little commercials. They really take you back. Let's see. This is from the 80s. The Nokia Cityman weighed 2 pounds and cost $6,000. Here's the 80s. A little headband action. Eventually, Nokia lowered their prices. $595. This phone was on sale at Highland Superstore for a mere $595 later in the 80s. But if you listen to the ad's advice, you can impress your friends by telling them it cost a lot more. Embrace yuppie culture. Did you ever have one of these phones, Mike?
I did not. I did not.
This one.
In the 80s, I was still.
This one's really funny here. $1,499, $1,500 for this. You can use it to make last-minute calls. You can use it to communicate at job sites. You can even use it on your boat.
Of course, what they don't show is that boat's parked at the marina.
General Electric got in the cell phone game in 89. They had a phone call. It only cost $397, less than the new iPhone. 30-number memory, adjustable volume, and last number recall. Oh, I don't have a way to blow this one up, do I? No. Do you see what this is? Before everyone
that
had a cell phone, beepers ruled supreme. Here's an ad starring Leonard Nimoy shilling Dial Page. Now, David's company is called Page Trader because he started his business back in the day when people used pagers before cell phones. But I found it interesting. I'd never seen this commercial before. Where Leonard Nimoy, I mean, what a perfect person to be hawking the beeper. Remember back in the days when if you had a beeper, you were cool, man. I remember going to a bar and seeing a guy with a garage door opener hanging on his belt because it kind of looked like a beeper, you know, a way to impress people and pick up chicks by pretending that you have a beeper with your garage door opener. So anyway, I should send David a copy of this picture. That should be framed and put up on his wall, Dial Page, Leonard Nimoy. All right. Okay, guys, that's about it. Look at these wicks. We're getting to the upside. Now, Michael and I talked about a couple reasons earlier in the live trading room why we could find some resistance in this area. I mentioned 54, 55. We didn't quite get that high. But we seem to be running out of steam here. So I'm going to point out that this entire week's action has been encased by this zone and this zone. If we don't close outside of these two zones by the end of the week, that will be a historic first. Tomorrow's Friday, tomorrow's triple witching, options expiration. So, you know, maybe we'll get some volatility, and maybe we won't. I don't know. I mean, we've poked out a little bit up here and a little bit down here, but this is it. All right, Michael, it's all yours. Sorry it took so long.
All right. That's all good. That's all good.
I remember putting on my headset going, gosh, I have absolutely nothing to say today. And here we are, 28 minutes later.
Yes, 28 minutes later. All right. I will get it going here. Let me grab the charts first because I forgot to do that yesterday. All right, you should all be looking at my charts right now, correct? Let me just check and make sure you're all looking at my charts. Yes, you are. All right, now I'm going to start the recording. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Thursday, September 20th, 2012. Let's see, let me just get through the results right away. The results, we had minus 8 ticks in Q and plus 8 ticks in gold. That was our morning. Okay, just a couple of trades. Didn't really have a lot to do this morning. I'll show you everything that's set up, but just a couple of things happened this morning. A couple of trades that we took anyway. Okay, before I go any further than that, if you have not taken a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. That's C-F, like Frank, R-N, like Nancy, .net/apply. And sign up there. All we ask for is your name and your email address, and you'll be sent an email that's got all the links needed to download the platform, the indicators, to get into the to get into the live trading room, to, you know, to speak to us, to contact us, phone numbers, emails, all that stuff. All right. All you need to do is give us your name and your email, and we will send it all off to you. What we highly recommend, if you do sign up for our free trial, take advantage of the free trial, get into the live trading room. You have plenty of opportunity in there to see what there is. Okay. You know, even though the markets haven't been moving around all that much lately, you know. Well, the ES and the YM really haven't been moving around all that much. You know, you can still see stuff happening on crude oil and on gold and in the NASDAQ. And, you know, the Russell's even had some trades. You would be doing yourself a disservice if you signed up for the free trial and you didn't download the charts and actually participate. All right. Let's go. Beyond that,
tell them how we'll be deeply wounded if they don't become a partner.
Those of you who are partners, there is a partners meeting tonight. If you have been on the free trial for any length of time, you should have the information in your inbox that is required to become a partner to get into that partners meeting tonight. If you do not have the information and you want it, just type in here that you want it or send us an email at support@cfrn.net. If you do have the information and you have any questions about it, my phone number is in there. You can call me. It's my cell phone number. Give me a call. If I don't pick it up, just leave me a voicemail, and I will get back to you as soon as possible. I have something new to you guys that's going to be going in the partners meeting tonight. I'll show you a little peek at it right here.
Tell them how we'll be deeply wounded if they don't become a partner.
Yes, if you don't become a partner, you know, Duane and I are, you know, we may have to take a week off because we will be deeply wounded. We've spent all this time and energy showing you what we have to offer, and you know, if you don't take advantage of it, well, we will just be crushed. But just kidding.
Okay, moving right along. Oh, you're doing the recap. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I am. I am doing the actually recording this, but that's all good. moving right along. This is, what market is this? This is a NASDAQ. Let's see here. We'll start out at the beginning of the day. How's that sound? Right here at the beginning, we had a bullish cross, a test of the BBC with an up close. Now what we look for is bullish divergence, testing the BBC. You know, price, the MA1 is this red and blue line, the thin red and blue line right here. I'm going to take this off for right now because that is the thing that we're going to show you tonight. the MA1 is this little red and blue line right here. So we look for it to cross the BBC, which is the green line. All right. Now, this is a four-tick range chart. All the four-tick range charts have the same indicator set and the same setup, the same rules, everything. All the four-tick range charts. We have them on every market that we trade. All right. We also have volume charts on two other markets, but I'll get to that later. You look for this bullish cross. You look for price to come back down. Test the BBC. When I say test, I mean touch it. When it does, you look for a close in the direction of the cross. Right here, you had a bullish cross. You look for an up close. Okay? When that happens, you want to check down here and make sure that you have bullish divergence. By bullish divergence, I mean that the cycle portion of the slingshot, which is this red and blue line right here, is heading up or in the overbought area. And the green line is moving against it, moving away from it. All right, that is the divergence. This is bullish divergence right here. Okay, you want to make sure that that's happening. Now, I'm going to go through this fairly quickly because, well, really, there's not that many, but it's the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. Bullish cross, test of the BBC, up close. You look to get long on the up close, and it goes up. Bearish cross, test of the BBC, down close. You see that? Bearish divergence here. This time, the cycle portion of the slingshot is heading down, going down into the oversold area. And the green line is moving away from it again. Test of the BBC. You wait for the close in the direction of the cross, and you get short. And down it goes. Right? Now, when you have this kind of divergence, what you anticipate happening is the green line is going to turn around and work its way down into the cycle, like this. Or this one here, it turned up and worked its way up into the cycle. All right? And then once it does that, you anticipate that it's going to do it again. All right? That's all there is to it. Pretty straightforward, pretty simple. Okay? Over here, this is a momentum trade. I'll get into that for the partners. Right here, you had a test of the BBC with bullish divergence and an up close. Another momentum trade on the short side. Right here, you had a bullish cross, test of the BBC with an up close and bullish divergence down here. Over here, you see it, you had the bullish divergence, but it didn't test the BBC. Over here, you had a bearish cross, a test of the BBC, and a down close. This was the trade that I took, and it ended up losing. But I took it, and I lost 8 ticks. The next trade, had I taken it, we had bearish divergence right here, a test of the BBC, and a down close right there. You know, that would have, if I would have seen it when it was happening, it was right at the end of the morning. If I would have seen it was when it was happening and taken it at the time, I would have been at least break even on the morning. Okay. You can see right over here we had a bullish cross, a test of the BBC with an up close right here. All right, and it switched back down right here. All right, this was the bullish divergence going with that one, and this was the bearish divergence going with that one. It right now we have some bearish divergence. It's pulling back up to test the BBC. If we get a down close with that, that may give us a shorting opportunity. All right, that was the NQ this morning. The ES. The ES was, well, it had some range this morning, which is more than we could say for a couple days this week. It opened up this morning right here, okay? It was right at the weekly trading zone, and I was telling the folks inside the live trading room that with the ES opening right below the weekly trading zone and the YM opening right above the weekly trading zone, we may be in for a little bit of sideways movement. We did have just a little bit of it. we moved sideways for about 15 minutes. I had drawn this trend line in as it was happening, and I said if we get a down close below this trend line, that should open the door to lower prices. This was the down close, and those were the lower prices. We didn't take the setup here. We didn't take the setup because the YM was right above its weekly trading zone. Okay, so I let that one go. Obviously, in hindsight, I wish I would have taken it, but it is what it is, right? Now, price moved up right here. We didn't have a shorting opportunity in here because we had a higher low trade right there. It came back down in here. I wasn't going to go long right into the weekly trading zone, but again, I said, I drew a trend line, and I said a close, an up close above that trend line should open the door to higher prices, and it did. I said the same thing over here. I had an order on to actually buy this one right here until this bar closed. All right, when this bar closed, I took the order off because we had a lower high pivot. Still, even with the lower high pivot, a close above that trend line right there should have opened the door to higher prices, and this bar right here was the close above that trend line, and it did open the door. And Dwayne and I had said at that time, we were saying, if you get on the other side of the MA1 right here, it's probably going to go up to this swing high right here. And that is what it did. Okay? That was the ES this morning. The YM, again, we didn't have any trades on the YM this morning. The same reason for the ES. It was running opposite of the weekly trading zone on the ES all morning. There was one spot where I was going to get long. It was right over here. I was thinking of getting long once we had put in a higher swing right there. Came back down and tested the BBC, but I didn't because I was putting an order on the ES at the time, and I didn't want to be long that much in one direction. All right. So anyway, the YM, let's see, it was the same type of scenario with the trend lines and all that this morning, except we're on the other side of the weekly trading zone. Okay? Once it moved up, a pullback down here to the trend line would have been an opportunity to get long. I believe the ES at the time is at 9:42, the ES at the time was below the weekly trading zone, so it dropped down. Then it moved back up, and at this point the ES was moving into the weekly trading zone. I wasn't going to trade long on this over here when the ES was going into the zone. Over here we had the higher swing. At the end of the morning session, though, which is right over here, you know, Bert had mentioned we got a double bottom right in here. If we drop down, you know, I don't know, say 5 or 6 ticks below that double bottom and close down there, that should open the door back down to the weekly trading zone. Okay, so look for a close down below, I don't know, I would say a close on any bar down below 13,470, okay? That should send it down to 13,440. All right, it should open the door to those lower prices. Let's see, that was the ES, the YM, the NQ. What market is this one? This is gold. All right, I'll do gold quickly and move on to crude oil and the Russell, and then we'll be done. Let's see, gold was, it started out a little messy this morning, like right in here. I didn't like the way it was trading right in here, so I didn't take any trades. I wanted to wait until it actually had a move. It had this big move here at right before the news event. This is when the ES moved down as well, by the way. Everything started to move down at the same time. The only way to really get into this was with a momentum trade right here. When this turned down, there was a momentum trade right there. That was the only way to get into that this morning. Okay. Let's see. It started to recover here. It pulled back too far through the BBC for us to take a long trade, though we did have this nice bullish divergence right here. Okay. As it moved up, right here we had bullish divergence. Again, it tested the BBC with an up close. There was an opportunity to get long right in there and ride it for about 10 or 15 ticks. It gave a couple entry opportunities, same type of entry in there. We had a bearish cross, a pullback, tested the BBC with a short opportunity right in here. Now, it worked out, but I wasn't really looking to trade it right here because I didn't like the way that it was just going back and forth across the BBC. You know, I'd rather have it strike the BBC and then move away from it, like this right up here. Okay. So there was a momentum opportunity in here. There was no divergence over here. Right in here, there was no divergence for the long side. This one didn't pull back far enough, and right here, there was a momentum trade. Right here, there was a momentum trade right in there. For those of you guys who are partners, you might recognize that. I shorted over here once we got the bearish cross pull back up to the BBC and a down close right there. I shorted it right there, and I took profit over here. Then it went back and forth a little bit. I didn't do anything in there. We had some bearish divergence. This was getting on toward the end of the morning session. We had some bearish divergence with an opportunity to short again right there. I didn't take that. And then during the break, we had a nice big move up right here. We had a bullish cross. Tested the BBC was right there with all this bullish divergence right here. Okay. Now, if anybody's got any questions about this, feel free to ask them. If you haven't taken the free trial with us, again, www.cfrn.net/apply. Get in there, get in the live trading room, you'll learn all about this. Okay. In the meantime, you can just watch our recaps if you want. And that's pretty much it on the gold this morning. Now let me bring up a couple other markets here. Hang on a second. I have crude oil. crude oil was all over the place right at the beginning of the morning. I actually did take one trade on crude, and I took a break even on it. This one right here. All right, but crude was pretty jumpy from the open. It was flipping back and forth quite a bit here. But you can see, you know, we had the bearish cross. It tested the BBC with a down close right here and the bearish divergence down here. It tested it again right here with a down close with bearish divergence. Then it crossed up right here, had bullish divergence, and it tested the BBC again right here, tested the BBC with an up close. It did it again over here, but I didn't circle that one because right here the cycle was headed down too much for me to want to get long. Okay, it came over here, gave a down close right here, but I didn't look to get short because, again, the cycle was going up too much. All right. Let's see. We didn't have any divergence in there. In here, we didn't have any divergence. Over here, we finally had the divergence down on the bottom again. Okay. Tested the BBC with a down close. Over here, we had a bullish cross. Tested the BBC with an up close. This is the one that I took, and it went sideways for a while. Once it closed up above the MA1 right here, it closed up above the MA1. It gave a little profit in the trade. I moved my stop to break even because once it closes above the MA1, it shouldn't close back down the MA1 before it makes a move. And in this case, it stopped me out right at break even. Let's see. We had divergence here, but the trade didn't come together until after we had the cycle moving up against us. Right here was an opportunity to get long. That only went about 6 or 8 ticks before it pulled back, but it was an opportunity to get long in there. Let's see, there are a couple more in here on crude oil on the short side. One right there and one right there with the bearish divergence down here. You see, right there is bearish divergence and right there is bearish divergence. On this one, by the time you get you down close over here, the cycle's moving up too far. Then we're into the break period here. Okay, we're into the break period and I don't see maybe a shorting opportunity right here might have been in play. Okay, and that was it on the crude oil for this morning. Now, what I want you all to take away from this is that we're using the same setup on all the 4-tick range charts. We're using the same setup across all these markets, all right? The same indicator set, the same logic, the same exact setup. And it works on all of them. Another thing that you may want to take away from this is that you don't have to use a 4-tick range setup. I use a 4-tick range setup because I have 2 hours in the morning to show everybody that the stuff works. All right. If I used, you know, a much larger time frame, there would be days where we wouldn't have any trades at all. And that's not going to prove anything to anyone. So keep that in mind. All right. You can use a larger time frame if you like to trade for longer periods of time. The same stuff applies. You just have to use bigger risk. My risk that I use on every single market that I use is 8 ticks. Okay, I'm using 8 ticks risk on every single market. And this one right here is the Russell 2000. It's actually got a shorting opportunity right here if it closes down. It did have a couple of trades this morning. Let's see, we had the bearish divergence here, but the cycle ended up moving up too much by the time we got the down close. You see, again, the 4-tick range, the same exact setup. All right, same thing here. The cycle's moving up too much. Right in here, we had some bullish divergence, bullish cross, a test of the BBC with an up close. So you could have gotten long right in here for the up move. What you anticipate, again, is when this green line is diverging from the red and blue, it's going to work its way up into it like that. All right. This one over here was a shorting opportunity. That only went about 5 or 6 ticks. The MA1 held it right in place right there, and then it turned around and went up. Again, this time the cycle met the green line instead of the green line going to the cycle. And that happens occasionally. Let's see. There wasn't all that much on the Russell this morning, but here's another one right here. All right. By the way, we had a weekly trading zone here at 50, I think, wasn't it? 49.50 was a weekly trading zone, I think. now, right here, we had a bearish cross, a test of the BBC with a down close right here. And you can see we had all this divergence right there, and the green line did move down to meet the cycle. All right. And then we're into the break, and right now we just had a down close. So what we would anticipate with this bearish divergence is that the green line is going to move down and meet the cycle. Price would make that happen. So I would look for it to get down here to 45.7. All right, that's what I would anticipate. Now, does anybody have any questions about any of this stuff? If you do, throw it out there. Frank, would I mind showing what looked like on an ES on a 30-minute chart. Not at all on the ES 30-minute. Not at all. Now, clearly, you're not going to get that many trades, but I'll point out the significant things here. You have a bearish cross, you have a divergence. All the same stuff applies with the divergence. All right, the bars are going to be much bigger, your risk is going to be bigger, all that sort of stuff. But if you're just looking for a bias, you have this divergence, and what you anticipate down here is that it's going to work its way back down into the cycle, like it did right here. All right. Now, that was that move there. So you got in when the green line closed down. It would have been the close of this bar right here. So it would have been 51.75. It drew back to 52.25. And then it dropped. By the time it got down to the cycle, that was like this bar right here, 51.75 down to... Oh gosh, that's not very much, is it? But I thought on the 30-minute it might be a much bigger range, and this was actually at 11 o'clock at night. But that's what you're looking for, all right? It was looking to get down to the weekly trading zone once it had done that, and that happened to be where it hit the cycle over here, okay? Over here, it came back up, tested the BBC, and then started to move its way back down, all right, into there. Let's just scroll back a little bit. Whenever you get the divergence, you're anticipating that it's going to work its way up. Hang on a sec, let me do this so you can see a little more of this. All right, whenever you get the divergence like this, you're anticipating that it's going to work its way up. Like this, you're still anticipating it. All right. I don't like it when it's in the middle so much, but you know, you're anticipating that the green line is going to work its way up. If you wanted to do something like, swing trade, let's look at something else, just doing a swing trade, we'll say. Let's put it on a daily. All right. Here, look at this from a swing trade perspective when you get these divergences. If you look over here on the right, each one of these blocks is 10 points. Okay? That's on a daily. And thanks, Jason. I'll bring that over and show it in just a second here. All right, but I'll flip it back to the 30-minute for you if you want to look at it. If you want to look at it there again. All right, you see what it's doing right now is it's setting up to give us some bullish divergence. So price is going to have to drop down significantly to set that up. All right. Okay, is that good? All right. If anybody's got any more questions, wants me to look at any other time frames or anything like that, I'm happy to do it, guys. Happy to do it. I wasn't kidding. I said this stuff works the same way. All time frames, all markets. That Russell trade that I had just said, right here is where you would have been going short, right over here, and that just worked out. And the green line hasn't even worked itself down into the cycle yet. So it's probably got a little bit more left into it, okay? But I had said over here 46.8 was the down close. Right in there would have been the spot to get short, and down here is where I anticipated it would get at 45.7. All right. That is it. I'm going to stop the recording here. I've been going for a while. All right.
All righty.
I just stopped the recording. Okay. Sorry, guys. That one took a half an hour.
Okay. All right, I'm going to grab the charts real quick.
Okay. Lynn, I'm going to send a link to you in here, okay, with the weekly trading zone video that I just uploaded. Okay.
I got to get the website updated with those as well. Guys, this is a soybean trade that we had this morning. For those of you that follow our Twitter feed, you got the tweet, or if you have the CFRN toolbar installed, it was there. Boom. It just popped up on your screen. Short the beans. Consider being short below 1645. Okay, and in an hour, the trade has dropped 20 cents. Okay, now that's equivalent to a 20-point drop in the S&P. We've been talking about the low volatility in the S&P and blah, blah. So that's why we do look at these other markets, because we can't make the S&P get up and go. We don't have that ability. We can swivel our head and see what's going on somewhere else. And so I spotted this morning. I tweeted it out. And in an hour, we got a nice move. And it's still got some debt. Now, earlier in the week, we had this. This went out on Globex Sunday night. That was a 72-cent move from stem to stern there. And then this so far has been 20 cents. And our target on this is down right around 16. Okay. And I'll show you this really quick. And then we go to David. Here's a head. Here's a shoulder. There's a shoulder. And there's a nice break of the neckline, plus some other things that we use to put these trades together. And so, again, potentially looking at a move as far as 16. If you're in the trade, if you got the tweet, you took the trade, you know, be sure to lock something in, take some profits. That's a really nice trade so far. And it looks like it's got the wind at its back. But you don't want to let that kind of a winning trade turn into a losing trade. And if you want to get on the email alert list, go to soybeandaytrader.com. All right. And tip of the hat and thanks to Bert for his help with that. Right now, we need to beat feet out to Las Vegas, where Robin Dane, the trading coach, is back from her trip. And we're excited to hear about that and all the adventures that you had. And we're going to talk to our good friend, Mr. David Williams, at pagetrader.com. Now, I know you've heard it before, but I want you to hear it again. Tonight is a partners meeting, 9 p.m. Eastern. Partners, please be there. Bring your questions. Feel free to email your questions ahead of time. That might enable us to have some charts ready for you to point out whatever it is that you have a question on, okay? If you're on the free trial and you've your free trial is going to run out probably today or tomorrow, then you have an email that explains what you need to do to become a partner. If you have any questions about that, Michael's phone number is in the email. You can also email us support@cfrn.net. If you need help with your charts or your indicators or any of that stuff, getting your account open, your account funded, then that's Mr. Burton Schlichter's wheelhouse, toll free, 866-928-3310. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Thank you very much, and good morning to you, good morning all the listeners, good morning Robin Dane, if she's back with us, and good morning Michael.
Good morning, Dave. I muted her mic. There you are.
Oh, hello everybody.
Did you have fun?
Hi, Robin.
So good to be back.
Good to have you.
Yes, good to have you back.
So, how was your big adventure? Did you have fun?
It was absolutely fabulous. I had talked to David one day, and I said, I'm on green overload with all the trees and the foliage, and things haven't changed yet in New England, but the green was just overwhelming from being in the desert so much, that was probably the biggest thing. And then just old memories coming back from friends, dear friends, and places where I couldn't even recognize my where I lived before. The trees were three times the size that they were when I left. It was just it was just like everything had just grown. So what it just looked different from what you remember. And but met some really great friends and had my lobster, which at $4.99 a pound, it was great.
Wow.
They do it right in the supermarket. They just throw them right into the steamer, and you just take them home and have your lobster, and oh, it's fabulous.
Yep. Make it a lot easier now than they used to.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know all that, Michael. You have all that at your fingertips, too.
I do.
I just remembered Ben was supposed to come on the show today. Ben, if you're out there, just type into the box, breaking. I know you always hate to interrupt us, but Ben sent me an email the other day and said, hey, it's been a while. And I said, well, dude, come hang out with us. So let me just shoot him an email and see if he's still planning to come today.
Yeah, have him come in.
Are you coming today? And he'll probably say no. And I'll say,
I should send
tomorrow.
You a picture of him. I have him on my phone.
I have him on my computer right there.
See? Yeah, there you go.
Hey, guys, I got news for you. If you use Firefox and you don't use Reportive as an applet, oh, you're missing out. Because every time you get an email from somebody, not only do you get their email, but you get all this information about all their social networks and if they have an image uploaded, who they are. I mean, it's a free app. It's called Reportive, RAPPORTIVE. And you just go to the App Store on Firefox. It's a Firefox plugin. It's not really an app. It's a plugin. It's called Reportive. It's a great tool. So you get an email from somebody you don't know, and not only do you have the email, but you get their picture, you get, you know, information about them so that you kind of know who you're talking to. It puts a face with the name and all of that. So you got to have an image uploaded to Gravatar or one of the social networks. It'll grab the feed. And so anyway. All right. Well, we're glad you're back, Robin. David, I had a picture just for you earlier. Did you see it?
No, put it up. I want to see it.
It's right there, my friend.
You have a business on the move. You can keep in touch every step of the dial page. Oh, that is funny. That's beautiful.
Leonard Nimoy. What better guy to sell a beeper, a pager?
No, that is Michael Bork right there. If anybody wants to know what he looks like, that is Michael Bork. Yeah. Ain't no two ways about it. Come on, Michael. You know that's true. You have dark hair, don't you, Michael? He's not even there. He won't even talk to me anymore.
He won't even talk to you. So anyway, I can't blow this up any larger, but David, you should go to Business Insider and look at the history of the cell phones. We went through them all this morning.
I saw you. No, I think that's just a marvel.
This one here,
to go back.
$4,000, 2 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only imagine how much did it cost to make a call back then? It was pretty expensive, right?
I remember getting that phone. I don't remember paying $4,000 for it, but I remember getting that exact phone in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
maybe in 1986, something around there.
Yeah.
When they first came out, they weren't cheap, but I don't remember them being that expensive.
And then you had to put the big antenna on the car.
Mm-hmm.
That huge
car
antenna.
car phones. That was fun. It's funny. Car phone.
That was a big deal, though. It was a status symbol. There's no doubt about that.
Well, it's like that one ad said when Nokia dropped the price all the way down to $5.95. In the ad, it said, but you can tell your friends you paid more.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was in the yuppie days when excess was. Michael was on the phone. He wasn't ignoring you on purpose. He was.
Oh, okay.
He just sent. I just got a note on my pager that says I'm on the phone. So. Let's look over at the S&P 500 E-mini futures. Unless you have more of your adventure you want to share, Robin, or David, maybe you got something you want to talk about.
No, I was curious to hear what Robin had to say and if she had a nice time.
I also have the Knishes on the way. I have a whole slew of New York friends that put in their request for potato Knishes. And so I have a bunch of those arriving tomorrow.
Okay, now what is a Knish? I don't know what that is.
A Knish?
Mm-hmm.
Knish is like a potato dumpling, round, soft on the inside and a little crunchy on the outside.
Is it like
and
a pierogi?
No, it's a little. It's different. It's different. That's more like a dough. That this is more. You describe it. You know what it's like, David.
I do. It's just it's Jewish food.
Okay.
That's what it is.
Okay.
So I had to bring those back, and then I had to bring New York Police Department T-shirts back, and it was quite exciting. But the funny thing was, I ended up coaching like five different people up in New Hampshire, which was good. Which was very good. And we had, you know, it was very invigorating. I found that I haven't been back in maybe 7 years, and I was just totally invigorated. And
sure,
I'm like
imagine.
Ready to rock and roll at this point. So I wanted to mention that we are having our webinar next week on the 25th, and it's on creating a powerful trader's identity. We did a little bit of a snippet on that on the Tasty Trade Show this week, and creating an identity is very, very powerful. It's a way to shift some of your trading weaknesses. It's a $25 webinar, and you'll get a lot of value out of it. It's a 21-day exercise that I teach, and then you have a one-on-one with me. And I've never offered it at that price. It's usually $200. So I'm just absolutely want to just fill the place. So you definitely need to check this out. It's not going to be recorded, but I am going to redo it maybe once a month to do that same one. But you should definitely check it out. It's going to make a big difference. We've got quite a few people that have signed up already. And
Where's the link at on your site?
Like to get you just go onto the site, and it's on the right side there. And basically what you do is you can look at the description. You can go to the store. You place your order. I get an email, and then I give you an authorization to come into the room with the link. And so those that have not received them yet, they're going out today. Since I just got back. And it was very exciting. But we had a little bit of some drama on 9/11 when I flew out. There was another incident in the wash. I don't know, David, if you heard about it. But we had maintenance worker that was working on the golf course in the backhoe. And he was in the wash. And I guess the water came up so quickly that he must have attempted to try to get to the dry part of the land. And he didn't make it, and so there was a search right when I was getting on the airplane. I was getting alerted on my cell phone, and so I kept, you know, tabs on the internet, and he was found 2 days later. Unfortunately, he didn't make it, but he was 5 miles away from where he was, and when they saw the backhoe was just showing the top of the very top of the backhoe, and that's like an 8-foot kind of thing, so mm-hmm. He must have tried to do it. And then I'm coming in and on the airport from yesterday, and in the morning I get another alert that a 47-year-old woman went missing in Mount Charleston on a hike the day before at 1:30 in the afternoon. I said, oh, my gosh, I'm going to have to land and go to a search, which I was planning to do because I guess they needed food and all sorts of things out there. And so we landed, and by the time we landed, they had found her. And she was alive, and our team found her. And
wow.
So I'm so thrilled because we have, on top of that, which is kind of cool, was it was the mother of a daughter who is the girlfriend of Chumlee on Pawn Stores.
Chumlee. Wow. What a character. All those guys are characters.
So yeah. Chumlee's girlfriend, that was her mother. So he was actually there at when we found her and was so thrilled about it. He's going to make a donation to Red Rock Search and Rescue. So we're thrilled. We really are thrilled. Because
that's a pretty good show. It's just, no Lizard Lick Towing, but it's a pretty good show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I guess if you go, I mean, I've never gone, and I've heard the lines are terribly long, and they're never there. So,
right.
And you know, so I don't know what the deal is out there, but I still have it on my list to go there. I don't know if you've ever been, David.
I haven't.
I haven't. nothing big, but the largest thing I can say to anybody is for the vacation was you do need to take a break every now and then from your trading, and you do need to connect with friends, you do need to connect with family members, and
well said.
It really does put a balance into your life, and it really, I mean, I sat down at a table with my neighbor who unfortunately has cancer, so I was really glad to see her and all of her kids, and it was just like we had sat down at Christmas dinner, 10 years ago, and we just laughed, and we just had such a great time, and I missed them terribly. I mean, just missed them terribly, but it was like there was no time in between, you know. So good friends are really, really important to keep in touch with, and they're absolutely enrich your life. And you should take the time to do that. You know, pick. You know, I have some people. I'll tell them to connect with somebody they haven't connected with in a long time. One a week. You know, even just one a week. Somebody that's a really dear friend that you haven't heard from, because time goes so quickly, and you never know what's happening in their lives. Unfortunately, we get stuck in our own lives and what's going on, and you know, everybody's stressed, but you know, those type of connections really do add to the quality of your life, and you can't put a price on them. You can't, you can't replace them, and so you should drink it in, you know, with all that you can. You should really drink it in, and that's what I'll say about my vacation.
Okay. Well, good, Robin. It's nice. You're doing great work out there with helping find these people and possibly finding them alive, which is, it's amazing, isn't it, how easy it is, how fragile life is when water is rushing towards you, no matter what. People just really don't fully understand the power of water because so many times people make an attempt to move through it or drive through it or whatever, and it doesn't end well.
No, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, he must have thought that it was okay to cross, because it must have caught him. He wasn't that far from the land. That's what was so weird. When you see the pictures of the backhoe, and his wife called in and said, oh, you know, he didn't come back home for dinner, and then they found his car in the parking lot, and then they found the backhoe. But 5 miles down, they found him. 5 miles. That's huge. That water was just, you know, the other guy was a mile away. Because he kind of got stuck and stuff, but he was 5 miles away. That's how fast this thing goes. And he must have attempted to, you know, get to land, and it just must have caught him and just risen so quickly. I mean, it rises so fast, and it's just so powerful.
Yeah.
It's extremely powerful. So, it feels really good, you know, that we had one person that was alive. But it's also closure for the family because, you know, 2 days after he's gone, you know, Metro won't go any longer. They won't continue to look. And so, you know, it's closure for the family. And so it's a really good – and it does put things in perspective when you see how fragile life is, just like you say. It's just, you know, when you're in that environment all the time and you're seeing it, and you're seeing, you know, what happens to people, you have to cherish the people that you have around you, and anything can happen at any time, an accident or anything. And so, you know, really being grateful for your life and what's going on and your friends and your family is very, very important.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Okay, well, Robin, it's good to have you back, and I'm going to, Duane, I'll take a look at the S&P here. We'll see where we are. Take a look at from our perspective. If you're ready to go, let's do that. Okay, so I think it's important. Let's take a quicker look, or a quick look anyway, at the longer term position of the S&P, which is important in our world anyway to know. The longer term position of the S&P is that it's still in a very strong
position, and it has been for quite some time, for a number of years. As everybody knows, the bad news has become the good news. This market has rallied since the low at March of 2009, has rallied on bad news. If you took all the news that came out and saw what good news there was and bad news, it's like 80-20. It's virtually all bad news is what's made this market go up. Now, we have had some good reactions back and forth, particularly starting from the quarterly top that we had forecast in 2011. We had a very good, solid, frightening decline off of that for many people. And the market firmed up on that, and now we're making new highs. And recently, of course, the market has advanced off of the June monthly low and has broken out to new recent highs. And just recently, we had talked about the market in the previous contract getting up to, or you know, ultimately getting up to, and decide, and that people shouldn't short the market because we felt with the market at 1400 that it would head up to 1475. And we've reached 1475, not in the December contract, but in the previous one. And we're still in our reaction off that level. We would normally expect a reaction off of 1475. However, the reaction off of 1475 has been a little unusual. This again comes back to this whole issue about volatility that we've talked about on a number of times on the program, and that although volatility certainly has picked up since the summer ended with regard to certain, you know, in certain ways the volatility has certainly picked up, but the intraday volatility is still extremely low. And it's gotten so low that I can even tell you just by almost to the hour, I can tell you that on the 17th, the market was showing that volatility was particularly, unusually low, and it has stayed so since the 17th. Now, this morning we did gap down, and we made a slight new low, recent low in the last few days, low, and that's nice. That's good that we've been able to do that. But the intraday volatility is extremely quiet in the S&P. So you just have to have patience with this market. I mean, we've been saying that for a long time, you know, and it's tradable, but it takes a lot more time to put a trade together. Not put it together so much, but to have it fulfill your target or get to a number. Just the profit areas are much smaller than they used to be, much more local, because in the old days you could really swing trade intraday to very, very distant targets. And we made a whole business out of giving out roadmaps intraday for 15 and 20 point swings where, you know, the market's here now and in 3 hours it's going to be at such and such number. Well, that kind of volatility is very absent from the market as of late and as of for quite some period of time. So it's a different market, and it will return, and the market is, we've said so many times, it's as big as life, and it has as many variations in it, and that's why you have to have more than one quiver in your arrow of your toolkit, because you need to be able to approach the market from a bunch of different ways, because it's going to change over time. And even though it does go up and it does go down and it does go sideways, and it's always going to do those things, the when, the where, the how, the volatility of all that, that's what makes the difference in how the market appears and how it trades, etc. So having said that, we talked yesterday, a couple days back, we had talked about the market would firm up on 1449 and would advance off of that 1449 up to at or near 1462. And the market did attempt 1462, but it did not quite make it. As a matter of fact, give me just a minute and I'll find the charts that are associated with this move. But the other day, as I'm looking, the market got up to 1459.25. And because yesterday the market also showed unusual behavior again with regard to volatility, some of the things that we follow that indicate whether or not volatility is present and accounted for and doing all the things it would do, we're not there. So we've seen some unusual volatility in basically this whole week. So now, having said that, so they were not able to reach 1462. And so we mentioned yesterday on the program that if a person wanted to, they could place a sell limit down. I can't remember exactly what the number was, but it was probably around 48 to 47, something like that, for short position for the market to go down and make a test or attempt at 39 to 38. Today's market did break the 48, 47 level, got down to 43, and has bounced off that level. Now, the day's not over yet. And this has prompted a number of trades for us, particularly a short trade that we had been in from 51.75 just a while back and have now exited. The fact is that this thing that we're seeing on the hourly charts, the compressed volatility, by tomorrow, if we haven't gotten any further on the downside, then we're seeing that on the daily chart as well. I mean, really, even today, by them not being able to complete it, it's a pretty good sign that volatility is shrinking dramatically, not just, you know, ordinarily, like, wow, it's quiet. This is really getting to be a very quiet, very low volatility market. And that means, in many cases, that a much larger, more important directional move is in the works. And so we believe that the market, although we certainly expected a reaction off of 1475, and we're underway now with that reaction, the fact is that much higher prices remain likely from our perspective. So hopefully we will see some kind of a very clear and easy signal to re-enter the market on the long side. But when the volatility gets this low, it does get trickier to get it right with regard to being able to, you know, come on a radio program and say to the world, this is where you should be long, or this is where you should get in, or this is the timing of it, et cetera, which we do. But when the volatility gets very quiet like this, sometimes it's better not to do that and let the market shake itself out. Because when the market gets very quiet and then is about to start a much larger move, it often has a very sharp sort of fake out move initially, and then it gets underway. And although after the fact, it can be very easy to go through it and show here's what you would have done and here's why it would have been easy, the truth of the matter is it's not easy in most cases. In the majority of the cases, it's not easy when they do that shakeout. And I would prefer to be not in the market for that type of shakeout, or at least let them show me what they're going to do and then catch an entry once the move is more underway. Because I'm not tormenting myself with the idea that I have to get any portion of the trade under my belt. It's just I'm going to do the best I can to get into a low-risk area, and then I'm going to trade it up to either a target or whatever methodology I'm going to use to trade it to. But what these low-volatility things do a lot of times is they tempt traders to try to grab the market because they want to be on before the train leaves the station and these types of things. And it is wonderfully satisfying to do that, and all of us have done that at some point or another. But you can't always do that, and not only can you not always do it, you most of the time probably can't do it. But that doesn't mean there's not plenty of other great places for you to get in and high probability places for you to get in. So once the market's done a move, remember, I mean, we've been through this before, and we've all talked about this on the radio program for years. Once the move is over, it's very, very easy to review it and say, you know, look how easy it would have been. But very much like I described the other day about the gold trade that we've been in for years now, when the market on the gold market went down and made a bottom, if you look at it now, it looked like it was very easy just to hold through that. It was very, very torturous and difficult because these were full monthly bars that we had to wait for until this rally, et cetera. And it just really exemplified that idea that the market has a way of making it look easy after the fact, but it isn't that easy in real time emotionally when you're in a position. I think most people that come to this program know that, but it still can be done. The trading can still be done. You can still manage your position, manage your stops and your profit targets, etc. So keep that in mind. don't let the after-the-fact market in your own work make you believe something that isn't true. It's better for you to realize, you know, you're going to be in the move. It's not going to act like it did last time. It's going to act differently because it does every time, and you have to manage the trade and manage your way through it. And it is very satisfying to try to actually find the high probability setups, trade them, and work through the reality of that particular setup and its particularities and all that, and make some money from it and have a nice little trade. That's the idea of all this, is to put it all to work and get it right as best as you can. You can be very graciously imperfect in the market and do very well. That's how I consider myself. You know, I'm graciously imperfect. I don't force myself. I try to do the best I can, and I don't force myself into any kind of corner, or I don't compare myself to other traders or other types of people who've made more money, or whatever your comparison is. To me, to compare yourself to other traders is an early sign of mental illness. What you should be comparing yourself to is your own previous ability compared to your improved ability. And if you'll stick to that and not point out and not worry about what other people are doing, or believe that you're not, you know, up to par or whatever it is, and just rise to your own potential, and as long as you're improving what you're doing with your own trades, if you can say, honestly, 3 months ago I was doing it this way, and now I've really learned to, you know, improve my risk control or improve my profit targets or whatever it is, if you're improving, that's the whole game, is to improve and to rise to your own occasion. It's fine to have somebody that you look up to. Perhaps there's somebody that, you know, you look at and who is, you know, a big trader or big money maker or whatever it is that you're looking for. But if you take that too far, that actually ends up turning into damage, I believe. It's nice to have somebody to say, you know, hey, this is a guy that really can do it, and I'd like to do and be like that. But you have to take into account who you are and the realities that you are. The actual fact that you're a person that has your own conditioning, your own needs, your own this and that, that has to be accounted for in trading. You can't pretend like you're somebody else, or you can, but that can only last so long, and later you're back to who you really are. It's better to work with who you really are and improve who you really are rather than try to imitate somebody else or pretend in the world of trading. So hope that's at least somewhat helpful. And Robin helps in this area herself with her courses and helping people to, you know, it's easy to get lost into a maze in your own mind about your own trading. You had a clear vision at one point, and maybe you took some losses and things happened, and before you know it, you're kind of lost in a bit of a maze, and you can't quite find your way back to that solid footing psychologically that you had. And that happens from time to time to everybody, and so that's one of the reasons that you might consider dropping by her webinar or spending some time with her, to have somebody outside of you help direct you back out of a forest that, when you're in it, can be difficult to see your way out of. So it's not.
I'd like to just interject a touch there. I had the opportunity to go to the Connecticut Hedge Fund Association meeting with the heavy hitters, and it was quite an experience. And what was interesting is they had one of the key guys at UBS on a panel. And he was very, very into the psychology part of all aspects of the business, from, you know, talking to the clients and the investors and the fund-to-funds and the hedge fund itself and the traders themselves. And I was really surprised that he had brought it up, and also surprised that so many are just now tuning into it. So it's a interesting... it's an interesting development that I don't think they acknowledged before, that now they're acknowledging that the psychology in all the aspects of the business are very, very important, because, you know, client relationships are important and the trust that's there and some of the trust that's been lost. There's so much money, they're saying, that's sitting on the sidelines because of all the Madoffs and all of these bad press on these hedge funds, that they're not sure what to do.
Yeah. they don't list greed as one of the seven deadly sins in the Bible for nothing. And when greed has you, you're not going to be thinking about market psychology. You're not going to be thinking about anything that's real. You're going to be thinking about going after the money. The money will be there if you get the trade right. You can get the trade right by focusing on the things that you do have control over. You don't have control over the market. What you do have control over is your understanding of the market, your ability to put a trade on, your ability to manage risk, your ability to forecast targets, or any number of things that would be considered part of a trade. You do have control over that, and if you walk it through and get money out of your head for a little bit anyway, so that you can just really look at trading for trading's sake, think of it as a game that there's no money involved. Here's this thing that moves. How do you capture some of that move? Think of it as a game, perhaps. That may help you to put aside one of the biggest blocks to your real growth as a trader, which is greed. And don't be afraid to admit that you're greedy to yourself. Don't worry about that.
It's very common, I don't like to do the greed thing. I don't know why. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a person being ambitious and wanting to have more, and doing better. What you have to watch out for is the greed factor taking your mind over and
right.
causing you to do things that you shouldn't do. You should always aspire to do more. You should always aspire to have $1 million a year or whatever. But you don't want that to be the driving force, and you want to be sure that you have balance in your life, and again, other things are happening other than that. You can get consumed by it. And if you do very
Definitely.
Well, you can get consumed by it and not have balance. And that's
right.
where you have to be careful. That's
right.
where you really have to be careful. And what are you going to do with the money? The key thing is, I always encourage my high-end traders to, first they take care of themselves, then they take care of their immediate family, then they take care of, their next group of family. Then they work into the community.
Then they take care of Red Rock Rescue.
Then they make a donation to Red Rock Search and Rescue.
Right. You're down on the list, but at least you're on the list.
I know. It's tough. It's very tough. I mean, when you think about it, this cost the city of Las Vegas hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to have their force go out there, and we're doing it all for nothing. No, all
right.
these people are buying their uniforms and equipment. I mean, it's not cheap. I have quite an investment in there so far with hiking boots and hiking poles and special
yeah.
lights and headlamps and backpacks and food and special clothing and
yeah.
sunscreen.
No, yeah, and sunscreen. No, that's going to...
Got to have the sunscreen.
Got to have it. Out here, that could really cost because there's a lot
oh,
of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so back to the markets, and let's just say, so it's very quiet today. The volatility is very low, and we noticed it a few days ago that it was not quite reaching levels the S&P we're talking about, and we're starting to see that on some larger time frames as well, at least for today so far. So I'm being cautious with any further forecast for the S&P until we see some completion of the levels that we talked about earlier. So let's let them cook here a little bit. We've had a couple of trades here that have worked or, shorting from earlier from the 5175 level, but how they handle that level and a few other things today, on the very, very small term, the market is moving back and forth. But on some of the larger time frames, it is showing reduction in volatility, which I think is indicative of a much larger move in preparation. So I think it's wise to keep that in mind. And with that, Dwayne, we'll move on to the gold market. Yes.
David, it's Bert.
Hey, Bert.
Hey, hey, Robin. Okay.
Hey Bert.
How are you? quick question. If we close above the 49 level today, would you think that we were going to challenge that 62 level?
Well, at this point, because of the volatility, I'm not sure that I could or would be willing to say much about what I think would happen. In fact, if you'll give me just a moment here,
and
let me take a look at that, I will give you something that I think might help with regard to this and today's daily close. Let me put it to you this way. I think if today closes above 14.50.50, then that will be the stronger position.
Okay.
We're trading at 14.51 right now.
Right.
Okay. There's no doubt in my mind that as of right now, the market's in an unusual position primarily because of volatility. This happens from time to time. It just means caution, and you know, you just want to use, and in some cases, like what I've said before, wait for the market to either complete important levels so that you know it's back to normal, or just stand aside and wait for this bigger move to come. But I think 50-50 would be a good level that if they closed below 50-50, that would at least indicate a further potential decline into tomorrow, but above 50-50 would be less likely to do that. It's not a big, big thing, but it's at least something to look at. But after having seen the last couple of days with the very, very small range and some natural numbers not being reached, and then today and yesterday, yesterday jumping up from the 49 up to 59, it was a 10-point move, but really they should have reached 62. Today they broke the 47 and they've gone down to 43 or whatever the number is on the low side. You know, that's just not normal behavior, at least at this point in the day. And it's been blossoming out from the hourly levels, hourly chart. Hourly chart was showing lower volatility, now the daily is. That tells me something is winding up here for a much more important move. So I hope we can resolve that either today or tomorrow. And if not, then we just use extra caution and we trade in some of these other markets until the S&P shows us what we need to see.
Yep, sounds good. So, thanks.
Yeah. Let's see here. For anybody who would have taken on the short side a position, obviously we can't manage the whole position through, you know, we're on the radio for a short period of time and we mentioned it, but if the market, if you did short 48, 47, 46, whatever level, and it got down to 43, I'm hoping that you use some sort of protective stop to keep yourself, you know, safe from, you know, having a large loss or something, because the market has rebounded and we're trading up in the 50 level here. Now, there is an argument under normal conditions to hold a position, let them bounce, because we know where the market under normal conditions would go, but that's the issue. Are the conditions normal right now? I'm starting to doubt that. Until further notice, I think it's wiser to, you know, play it close to the vest a little bit here. So, and why not? Why make everything have to work perfectly? You know, just hold off. Let them, you know, let them show their hand a little bit more here, and then we'll have another setup, you know, which comes soon. But one other thing also is, today, if we did close above 14.50.50, that also ties in with a possible, I mean, yeah, like I said before, it could be bullish, and we might be able to do something with that. In the meantime, it's a real quiet market, and we'll leave it alone for now. Bert, unless you have anything else you want to add to the S&P or maybe your outlook or...
No, not at all. I mean, we're congesting here. We're sideways. Yeah, it's been tricky in this area. So, you know, it really, you can flip a coin. You know, we're either going to go to 62 or 38. And
right.
We got dojis on both ends of the spectrum. So,
yeah, you can see they're doing something here. They got something going on that's quieting them down. It's very, you know, you hear about the term complacency. It's very complacent. Very relaxed market up at these high levels. So let's see what they do. And then let's move over to gold. We'll take a quick look at this. We don't have a lot to add on December gold, except that we feel that the rally that gold had recently reached important levels. This was a significant move up that we felt was important enough to book some of our position on. So that means that we could expect and do actually expect a reaction under normal conditions on the downside off of the current highs in the gold. So I'm not discounting further move up, but a significant move has happened, and this area that we're in right now, price-wise and even in a timing point of view, is important. So we'll talk about this later, you know, as the market continues to move from here. It's been quiet, too. Very narrow range up here near the highs. let's see what else we have. We talked yesterday, about Facebook. Facebook still continued on significantly higher yesterday. Dwayne, I don't know if you saw what they did. But at the time, when we were talking, they had not broken out to yet again new recent highs, which they did do late yesterday.
They had some news today, which we talked yesterday at length about Groupon and their business model and how that business model, you know, as interesting as it was for the end user and attractive and fun and whatnot, that it just really wasn't working. I mean, the stock's 80% off its highs. So I'm going to have to put you on hold 1 second, David.
Oh, go ahead. While he's doing that, let me say a couple things about Facebook. We don't have a trade in Facebook. We haven't done anything with Facebook. But I believe that Facebook is going to find $23.20 as resistance for some time here, that this is an important level that we've gotten up to and are now reacting off of. So I would not be surprised. This isn't a trade to do, but I wouldn't be surprised to see that area be difficult to close above and therefore a multi-day reaction. So we'll see how that plays out with Facebook here. And while Dwayne is still on his call or whatever, we'll continue on over to the bond market. I'm going to take a second look at bonds because there are some other potential setups, but we had talked about originally about the September 7th bottom, which had a very, very sort of dead cat bounce, and then we talked that if they closed below that bottom on September 12th, it would indicate a much sharper decline. This is called a reflected wave breakout on the downside, and they certainly had a big decline, several points down, you know, from 148 down to 144. So they had four full basis points lower from that breakout. This is the value of these reflected wave breakouts. We'd forecast that then September 17th would mark a bottom for a multi-day advance off of that low. And the bond market has had three full sessions up higher off of that reflected wave low. We've had a nice move up, and we'll see how the market continues from this point. But I think it's probably we're probably very close to a more important bottom here, but that's what I'm saying. I want to take a look and do some work on the bonds for those of you who follow it, including ourselves, and see if there's something bigger that we can hang our hat on.
Okay, I'm back. The big emergency. Okay. My cell phone was blowing up. My son forgot his saxophone in the car this morning, and so, Dad, I'm in music class, and I gotta have my saxophone. So, my wife's running it over. So.
Well, there's probably an app for that.
Apparently, if there is, I don't have it. Okay, Facebook. You had asked about Facebook, and Facebook had news today. The news is we know we have to develop a revenue. We know we got to get revenue. Wall Street's told us we have to generate revenue, and so they launched it's like a copy of the Groupon business model.
Mm-hmm.
So Facebook, here's a stock that's 40% off of its IPO price, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going to go emulate the business model of a company that is 80% off of its IPO price.
Maybe they'll do it a little differently, but I know what you're saying.
The difference will be in the cost, and so it will be, I think, more affordable for the business owner, for the restaurateur, whoever is using that. It will be more affordable for them. And the fact that it is part of a social media stream where people will be making comments and going, oh, yeah, I ate there last week and it was really good. I think that you're right. That could work a little better for them because with Groupon, you just get the email. Now, I've got to say, now, since you don't get Groupon, David. You probably
no, I don't.
You've never read one of their emails, right?
No, I don't think I have.
They, when you get an offer with Groupon, it's not just come get a massage for $50 off or 50% off or whatever. They go, they write, they have some first class writers. They're humorous, they're edgy, they're funny. I mean, even if you never take a Groupon offer, it's fun just to open the emails and read how creative the writing staff got describing what it would be like to go and get this luxurious massage or eat this fine dinner. I mean, they really are creative. So
that's beautiful.
So you have that aspect of Groupon, but with the thing they're doing on Facebook, it could be, I don't know if it's a game changer for Facebook, but it is at least a brick in the wall. I mean, it's, and it, because if they put together a lot of these little things with as many users as they have, the size of their user base.
It could be killer.
It's good to see them doing some, I mean, it's a step in the right direction. And here's the thing, is because they've been letting retailers use it for free now for a number of months. They're just now getting ready to start charging. So there's no numbers yet to see what's going to happen. But their cost, their barrier to entry, their cost to roll this out is like literally nothing. See, retailers are already putting these little ads in the Facebook news stream. And now Facebook is simply saying, okay, we let you test the waters. And so if you want to keep doing that, now you got to pay. And I think it's like $5 an ad. And I don't know if that's per click-through or what the metrics are that they use to measure that. So it's not like Facebook has to go out and open up a new office or build a building or buy more servers or hire additional people. Everything is already in place. So they're just simply saying it's no longer free. Now you got to pay. So it, this really could be a potential turning point for them.
It, oh, absolutely. It could be. And it, listen, the Groupon, like you were saying yesterday, Duane, and we were all agreeing that the Groupon business model has a lot of good in it. They the unforeseen thing was that people became groupies and they just started to use those services of all these businesses that had 50% discounts, and then they weren't going back, as I understand, to the business owners weren't getting what they wanted out of it, which is a repeat customer. They're willing to pay up front for the customer to get them, to acquire him, and then they weren't coming back because Groupon did, in fact, make it so attractive to open the emails and to read them and to go to these other things and on and on and on. Well, maybe Facebook can correct some of the flaws in that in some way and make it really work, especially with their size, et cetera. I mean, we have a number of examples of businesses that were not doing well, and I don't want to – this one isn't the best example, but because it has to do with Apple, and Apple is on fire. But, you know, the notepad business was dreary. I mean, it had been around for quite some time. If you think back, the notepad thing was around already when Apple came out with their iPad, and it was
Hang on 1 second. Robin, are you still there? Okay, she had
I am, but I do have to run.
Okay.
All right, we just got a call out, but everybody try to sign up for that webinar. I really, really think it'll help you. It's a great exercise. It will help you move forward, change some bad habits, and you can't beat the price. So you know, be there, be square, and I apologize. We just got a call out for a 19-year-old girl just went missing. She's autistic, and we're going to see what we can do. So I have to run.
Good luck on that.
Good luck with that.
And I will be here tomorrow.
All right. We'll see you then.
Have a great day. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Robin.
All right.
Anyway, so the notepad business had been doing very poorly, and when Apple came in, they made some changes, and whatever the thing was, it exploded the business. And now suddenly notepads are the big thing, and, you know, I'm going to get one at some point. I don't have one yet, but the fact is that business blew up. So they have it's a different company doing the same business model, but maybe making some changes and some new twists. And I believe they do have a shot. That'd be fun to see, because there's enough good in the Groupon business model. Even though their stock is down 80%, there's something there. and it may need to be shifted and moved around, but it may end up working out very well for Facebook. So we'll see. Anyway, so Facebook, real quick while you were gone, Dwayne, I was just saying that on Facebook, I like the idea that 2320 is going to be difficult for them to close above for a number of days. It's likely, and we'll see how they handle this level today and tomorrow, et cetera. No, we're not forecasting or giving a trade in this, but just that that's an initial place that I think is going to be difficult for them to close above for a little bit here. And so we'll continue to watch this.
They closed yesterday above the 50-period moving average. So that right there is a substantial achievement for this stock, getting above.
Yeah, no, no doubt, no doubt. And they're today they're and they're still above it, according to your line there.
Yeah, they're but the stock's down today, right?
Yes, yeah, they're still above the 50-period.
Yeah, so that. It didn't react favorably to that news. I'm surprised.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll keep an eye on that. Let's see. We had talked about for quite some time. We've been talking about the euro. We originally had talked about the euro having a top on the week of September 3rd. It came 1 week late on reflected wave, which was last week, the week of September 10th. And that September 10th week was important in a number of markets. The euro was on a tear. To be honest, I would have preferred to see the market get up to the 131.95 level. They didn't quite get there. It wasn't a forecast, but just in my own mind, I would have liked to see a little bit more on the upside. They weren't able to do it, but the movement, once you get past the 1 unit late on reflected wave, you're at a very critical juncture right then and there, and you're at a point where all the arrows start to point in one direction. And that's why a lot of times I will wait for the 1 unit late, which doesn't happen, you know, every day. It depends on the time frame you're looking at, et cetera. But the 1 unit late is very powerful at that point. There's a lot of independent things are coming together to get the market to the 1 unit late. And when you get past that, it's a very high probability trade that the market's going to continue, is going to reverse, because you've run out of time in this particular methodology. So the euro has, in fact, you know, turned strong or decently down, has taken up a good move down here. And this sets up the potential for several different kinds of trades in the euro. In the meantime, we don't have anything to give out on it other than the forecast for the top. Moving over to the crude oil market, throughout August and into September, we've talked about we began with the August month as the top because August had come in very, very close to the natural price level for September, which was $98.58. That's the natural price. And they had touched or came very close to it. They came to 98.29, which, you know, is pretty close. But the real on-time month was September for a top, and we've talked about that here. And we're looking for a move down to test or attempt 88 on the downside. Well, you know, this market has responded very quickly in the very month that it was supposed to make a top, which is the month of September. It has already moved the majority of the move down to 88. Today's low has already been $90.66. So we think lower prices are still due in this market. And I think news-wise, the reasoning behind this has to do with the Saudi announcement that they were sympathetic towards the higher prices and were going to take certain actions to help fix that. And then that got everybody running for the hills here. But this is a good example. This is a very, very good example of a forecast and then news coming out to support the new direction. This is why I say that it isn't, you don't turn this into two different religions, technical and the news, and many people do. There's no need to, because they both are really two sides to the same coin. So you may really like to do news and think that the technicals are worthless and have no meaning at all. You may believe the technicals mean everything and that the news has no meaning at all. And you see people take these positions over and over again. And I myself, for many, many years, took the position that the news had nothing to do with the movement in the market because you could forecast what the market was going to do long in advance of the news that would subsequently come out and make the move happen. The truth of the matter is that the news is necessary for the market to make that move in general, but that what you're really doing technically is you're technically forecasting when news is going to occur. That's one way of looking at technical analysis. Instead of saying, well, we're forecasting a top here in the market, you could say it that way for September, but you could also come up and say, we're forecasting that important news is going to come out. We're using the market and technical analysis to forecast when important news is going to come, and that news is going to be enough to change the direction of the market and send it lower. It all works together. It's like, why split it up into a bunch of different pieces and oppose one against the other? Are you listening, Mr. President? Why split it up and oppose everything against one another? Why not just put it all into one big package? It all works together. The whole shoot and match works together. News is just part of the whole function of the movement of the market. Technical analysis is just one part of the whole function of the market. And there's no need to be in a big fight over it. I don't think, you know, I haven't heard people talk about the big thing between technical and news for a long time, to be honest. I really haven't heard those discussions. I think they were around more, at least for me, back in the 90s more than they are now. But either way, so the forecast for a top in the September in September in the crude market has already reached the majority, 85%, if not 90% of the move down that we were expecting. It all happened in the same month that it was forecast to turn. That makes it more difficult to trade it. You know, here we are. So we would normally expect then a multi-month sideways to lower movement here. And crude is a very, very active and tradable market. You can make enormous points gains on crude oil if traded properly. This is the longer-term trades. You can also do short-term trading in crude, of course. And it can be very good on the intraday as well. So I don't have a lot to add to that, just that the market's done a big portion of the move. How they handle the 88.50 to 88 level when they get down there will be important to us with regard to any new longer-term position, like, as an example, selling puts for a bounce and that kind of thing. Let's see, what else do we have
here? David, I would add, Dwayne, mm-hmm. Everyone should be looking at November crude.
Okay. Am I looking at November crude, or do we? What price do you have in crude right now?
November crude, $92.25.
Okay, so I'm showing $91.91. That has to be the previous.
Yeah, that's October because today's expiration. So.
Okay. Good enough. And let's see if there's anything else. Yeah, there's a lot. Let me tell you this also for crude, just as a general comment. There's a whole bunch of volatility cycles coming up for crude as well, on even daily and weekly, some of the shorter term stuff, charts as well coming up. So this market really has a lot of potential for big movement. Okay, so let's see if there's anything else we can talk about. We've covered the crude. The Tesla, don't have a lot to add, but we had forecast that Tesla would make a top. Anybody with reflected wave and anyone who's coming to our seminar will be using this as one of the examples, the September 17th top in the Tesla stock. Now, September 17th was a big breakout on the upside, and the market looked strong and moved higher, et cetera, on that day substantially. But it was also completing, at the same time, a four-point move that was forecast off the weekly bottom that had occurred a week prior. We'd forecast a weekly bottom as well. So this is an example of using the two time frames, one to forecast the bigger weekly move. I don't make a habit. I do trade it sometimes, but I do not make a habit of trading against larger bottoms. They move up to a particular level. They've completed an initial target. Sometimes there are really good setups there to trade against that trend because later it's going to continue and move higher. But in this particular case, we didn't trade it, but the fact is the market did top on September 17th, and we're in our third day now off of that. So Tesla's another stock, for those of you who trade stocks, that, you know, we've talked about it a lot. It trades well. It's very easy to read, and at least for the time being, things do change, but it's very easy to read, and we'll continue to talk about this stock. Bidu, B-I-D-U, Baidu, we talked about this putting in a weekly bottom on the week of September 10th. They had a very nice move up from the low of 106 up to about 116 or so. They reacted off that. This is an interesting stock. Can't remember who mentioned this to us, but this will be interesting to see how they manage where they are right now, because they've had their initial move up, and they're reacting on the downside. And we'll talk more about this as we get more information on it, but we're keeping an eye on that. Some people had asked about that individual stock. Then let's move. Dwayne, do you have anything you want to throw in real quick?
Nope.
About any of this, or?
Nope.
Okay. of course, with the euro going down off of its one-week late top, the dollar tends to move up. The Fed announcement that they are either printing or digitally or dispersing or whatever they're doing with $85 billion a month, that is a that has the potential. These are the seeds already. The seeds are being planted already for the next inflationary wave. The seeds are being planted for the next run of much higher interest rates on things. These are the seeds by, you know, actions that we're doing. Let's just give them full credit. Let's say that these actions are actually necessary. I believe they're a waste of time myself, but let's just say that they're necessary. And I'm not an expert. That's just my opinion. I think that this is just another wrong-headed move by our government to try to fix something. They're just throwing stuff at the wall at this point. They don't know what the hell to do. They just don't know. Nobody knows. They don't know. They just don't know what to do. And they're trying every trick in the book that they can. And they're quite frankly out of tricks at this point. They have no new tricks, the Fed. This is it. Print a whole bunch of more money. The interest rates are already at historic lows. They've already did a QE1, a QE2. We're now on QE3. You know, this administration's made the argument many times that, you know, the previous administration just did the same things over and over again, and it look at what it came to. Well, that's what we're doing here. We're doing the same things over and over again. If stimulus one doesn't work, we go to stimulus two. If that doesn't work, we go to stimulus three, and so on. They're out, unless there's another trick that I don't know about, and there may be, but as far as I'm concerned, they're out of tricks. And so I don't know where we get this money from. I really don't quite understand the deal, but they're going to pull another $85 billion out of the magic government hat, and they're going to disperse it through the banks and through other channels, which will make jobs happen. That's the plan. And we've talked about the banks, and, you know, Dwayne has talked about the loan conditions of banks and this and that and the other, and we'll just see how this plan works out. I think the spirit of the entrepreneurs and the people out there, if you give them an incentive and an opportunity without fear of reprisal down the road, of new regulation and new all kinds of problems that they're going to have to face that might be insurmountable, there could be an enormous wave of businesses wanting to take advantage. But there's a lot of uncertainty because this administration has made so many obvious signals that have frightened businessmen. And by every polling measure, you pick your best poll, they've done the polls. Businessmen are afraid to invest money at this time. They're actually afraid to invest because they don't know and they can't really have a realistic view of what the future is. It's just too uncertain. And part of the uncertainty, no small part of the uncertainty, has to do with the administration and their attitude towards business, their attitude towards regulation, the president's own attitude towards America. You know, he has quite obviously discounted and denigrated the idea that people get ahead, you know, that, you know, you think you're so smart, you think you're so this, you think you're so that. He's made those comments about businessmen. And so I wonder, and I don't wonder, I actually know that what he feels towards businessmen, he feels towards America as a whole. For some reason, he's very uncomfortable with America getting ahead. He doesn't think that's a good idea, that we have this exceptionalism that we've had all along. And there's something about exceptionalism in individuals that bugs him because everyone isn't in the same winning pool, or I'm not really sure what it is, but it does clearly, it bothers him. Clearly, there's something wrong in his world with people getting ahead and rising to their own potential. That bothers him as a social scheme. He wants to come up with something that balances and levels the playing field, as if you reaching your highest potential needs to be balanced so that other people aren't what? Hurt? Their feelings hurt? The fact that you... Yeah, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. It's just... It's a strange combination of tortured upbringing and ideas and a mix-mash of radical and far left and socialism. And I don't know. He's a very reluctant capitalist at the very, very least. You could say that about him. So businesses, I think you could do a lot more. There's $85 billion a month we're going to spend. I'm not an economist. I'm not pretending to be one. But God, I think you could do a whole lot more with $85 billion, a whole lot less than $85 billion. I don't think you'd have to put money into it. You just have to get out of the way and stop creating, either inadvertently or purposefully, this atmosphere that businessmen can feel is palpable. And that atmosphere is they are not comfortable betting on the future under this administration. It's just too weird. That's what it is. The polls have confirmed it time after time after time again. So whatever this $85 billion is going to do, it's going to flood the channels, it's going to flood the banks, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. We'll see. You know, I'm sure there's economists out there, we talked about this the other day, that'll say, oh yeah, this is exactly what you need. This will do it. And maybe they're right. Maybe this is exactly what we need. This is the third round. This is the third time they've tried to do this. I'll get onto it in a second here, but I just want to say, for the record, we're talking about the administration and repeating and doing things. You know, our president, he claims he's for the little guy. He doesn't like the rich people. He wants to give the little guy a shot. You hear him say that over and over and over again. Right now, under this administration, more people are on food stamps than ever. This is the guy who wants to give the middle class and the little guy a shot. Right now, we've got more food stamps than ever. And that's after 4 years of all of his programs and 2 years of having the Democratic Senate and the House and all that stuff. More people have fallen out of the middle class into the poor than any time in the last 40 years under this administration. This is the guy that wants to help the middle class. Homeownership is at its lowest rate it's been in 40 years. This is the guy that wants to help the middle class. He promised unemployment would never go above 7.5% if we did the billion-dollar or trillion-dollar stimulus. We did it, and unemployment reached 9.2% and has been above 8% for his entire presidency. This is the guy that wants to help the middle class, or so he says. Black unemployment is higher than it's ever been under Obama. His promise to cut the deficit in half failed, and instead it increased by $6 trillion under his watch. This is what all of us are going to have to pay. He wants to raise taxes on every small business. He promised us Obamacare to help the little guy would cost less than traditional Medicare. And yet every nonpartisan group that has added up the numbers says it's going to cost billions more than Medicare. And just today, the CBO said that 6 million middle-class Americans will be hit with a stiff tax hike based on Obamacare. The very people he says he won't raise taxes on, the very people he says he wants to help. He's never passed a budget since the day he's been in office. I could go on and on and on. I'd like you to seriously consider not voting for President Obama, because everything he says he does or wants to do, he hasn't done, and it's gotten worse for those people. I don't want to be one of the people he's trying to help, because I'm seeing what happens to the people he wants to help. They're not doing well. Please don't help me, Mr. Obama. Because I don't want to be in the group that you try to help, because I see what happens to the people you try to help. They're not doing well. I just read off that whole list. Now, he's had some accomplishments as well. We did get Osama. You know, that's big. I would have liked to hear him say at least a little bit, say, you know, and I'd like to thank the previous president who did an awful lot of the groundwork for finding out where this guy was. Yeah, that was part and parcel to it, but you got to give him credit for it. GM did go into bankruptcy, and I guess you can say, well, GM came back and they're doing well. They haven't paid their loan back yet, but they're doing very well, and I'm delighted to see that. But my goodness, I mean, if you're measuring something on its record, this has been a really lousy record. And yes, I agree, he was dealt a bad hand, but he didn't play his hand at all well. He played it very badly. He doesn't know what to do, nor does his administration. So that's where we are today. And so we're now on round three of quantitative easing. And we'll see if that can help out the economy. I would love to see it help, even if it's under his watch. And because, you know, to get the economy back in motion is good for everybody. It is. It's good for everybody. So, you know, I hope it works. I just don't really understand how it's going to do it. I think there's much better ways to do it. Okay. See, Dwayne, I got off the subject myself. Now I'm back to markets. Look at that. So yeah, the dollar, we talked about the dollar. Okay, this is one. We talked about cocoa yesterday, and I do want to say we talked about cocoa being potentially, we're not a big cocoa trader, but there is the potential for a setup here at cocoa. $25.10 or so is the level that they have to close above today, and they've tested it. They've gone down to 25.06, and we're trading at 25.19. So we may have already closed here in cocoa. I'm not sure. Maybe Bert knows. But I'm concerned because they have pushed the market and they're testing this level. So you do have to, if you're going to do the long trade with cocoa, and or if you're already long with cocoa, you really do have to use something under today's low, which is not very far from where we are, as a protective stop. And then if the market does open tomorrow above the 25.10 level, and starts to firm up, we'll talk about it and we'll go from there. But
the market is closed. Cocoa's closed right now.
It is. Okay, so they've already done their close. Okay, well, fair enough. We'll talk about this market into tomorrow. So they did close just a little bit above the 25.10. They're up at 25.19. That's not a lot. That's a very small close above that level. Let's see if there's anything else we've got for you here. The Groupon, we talked about this too yesterday. Groupon had a nice little advance yesterday, similar looking to the Facebook, and they're moving somewhat higher. Don't have much on copper. With a natural gas, we might have something on, but I haven't put anything together on it yet. I think that may be everything that we have right now, Dwayne. Yeah, I think that probably is. And let's go back to the S&P real quick and just see where we are. So, yeah, we've just been moving sideways here. Very, very quiet market, you know, very unusually quiet volatility, but this happens, and it is a precursor for a much larger directional move. So I would be cautious with the S&P, and don't let it drive you batty, and don't let it drive you into doing something that you normally wouldn't normally do. Do what you normally do. Be conscious of something that makes you act differently than you normally would, because it's not that difficult to get an edge in the market. It really isn't. What often is difficult is to keep your eye on the ball and hold on to your edge and not let the market throw you around so that you forget what your edge is. You know, sometimes when you see people play a game, you know, or, you know, fight each other or whatever it is, you know, the guy, sometimes you hear people say, well, he's got him playing his game. You know, instead of you fighting your game or playing your game, you're playing the other guy's game. He's got you in that position somehow doing that. The market is very good at doing that to people. And so you may have a very good edge, a very simple or very eloquent or very advanced edge, whatever it is. But the market does have a way of getting you to get, even if you have that edge, it has a way of getting you to get off that edge. And then you're in no man's land and they own you. So you just keep that in mind. You know, ask yourself, is my eye on the ball? Am I focusing on the thing that I have, the little advantage that I have? Or am I just all amped up and wanting to trade out of greed or because I need to make a, you know, a payment or something like that? You know, I really do not suggest trading for house payments and trading for that sort of stuff. I suggest that you trade for money that you ultimately may live on later, but that you have some other money for your regular bills and that sort of stuff, because who needs that extra pressure on you to force you into making decisions based on deadlines that have nothing to do with what the market is telling you it wants to do, etc. So those types of pressures are unnecessary. So, and you know, you can trade with a relatively small amount of money in an account that you just have on the side and trade according to your, you know, let your success determine your growth. That's a good way of putting it. Don't let somebody else tell you, well, I know this one guy. This happens in everything. No matter where you are, no matter what industry you're in, no matter what you are, and you remember this all the way back from when you were a kid, is your innocent efforts at some new thing, there's always that guy that's going to tell you the big story about what you're trying to do. There's always a guy there that says, oh, you know, if you were into, you know, karate when you were young, well, there's always going to be that guy that comes, oh, yeah, well, this, you know, I know this guy, Ted, he can break four boards, you know, with his hand. So, well, already they've thrown your game off because you were just interested in it, you're starting to learn, but now you're thrown off and breaking boards has become important to you now because some idiot told you about Ted, who doesn't really exist anyway, who breaks four boards. Or if he does exist, who knows? And there's always that guy there or that situation that comes up that tries to throw you off your game. Try to see that that's trying to happen to you when it comes to markets, that something's trying to throw you off your game. And often that something is you. It's your own reaction to life and to the markets. That's why the psychology is a big part of this, because you want to learn how to stay on your game. And if you can do that, you've beaten a great big portion of what many people struggle with and ultimately fail with, which is getting over their own reactions to life, personal issues, and what the market makes them do, throws you off your game. And then you're playing their game, you're not playing your game, and if you're not playing your game, guess whose game you're playing? Their game. So anyway, I hope that helps. I've seen it in myself a million times, and these are some ideas that have helped me. And I do ask myself from time to time, you know, am I on my game? Do I have my, you know, just to double check, am I playing somebody else's game? Is there some hidden motivation that's making me want to step up here? Because my best trading, just for me, is when I'm just very relaxed, just looking at the markets, just thinking, marveling at how they move, and then suddenly, like, hey, there's something. Now look at that. Look at that. I can't believe that. And then, you know, you start setting up a trade. But just that kind of very relaxed, easygoing attitude has worked well for me. It may not be the best for everybody, but that really took me, because I'm kind of an amped up person anyway, it took me away from that whole thing of keeping or getting my eye off the ball. And keeping your eye on the ball, you know, you've heard that your whole life, but all it really means is that your vision for what you're doing and what your edge is intact. It's not been broken into little bits and pieces and spread around your mind. You're operating off of your vision, not somebody else that played it with you or some new event that threw you off or anything like that. And your vision is worthwhile having. If you can put it together inside your head and it can motivate you, you want to hold on to that. Keeping the eye on the ball is keeping an eye on your edge in the market and making sure that you're trading because of that edge and not because of some other lesser important and often deadly or bad, you know, influence that would make you get all amped up about trades and trading and all that stuff. So there you are, Dwayne. I think that's all I can give today. I gave that out sort of partially because of what Robin said earlier about the importance of psychology and how if the more greedy you are in any given moment, the less you are interested in the psychology. And I'll even flip that around and say the more interested you are in psychology, I think in general you'll find that you're more you get a seasoned approach to this because you see where you're coming from and really you know what your edge is and you're holding on to that and you're not letting greed or anything else throw you off your game. It does happen. You can get thrown off, but as long as you remember that idea that keeping your eye on the ball, you'll probably do, it'll probably be very easy for you to get back on your game and be able to do good things with your trading. And there you are, Dwayne.
All right, Dave.
Well, I'll plan on seeing you tomorrow. I'll talk to you tomorrow. It's Friday, the end of the week. Nice trade in soybeans today, Dwayne.
Yeah,
I noticed you guys had gotten short on the break of some level there, and I haven't looked at them yet, but they're down nicely today. Soybeans is really – this is a really nice market. It can get a little dizzying at times because it really does move and bounce and twist and turn, but – we ourselves have traded in soybeans for a long number of years, and I enjoy this market. I haven't had a trade in a little while in it, but it's a very, very tradable, usable market. And this current position, we don't have anything other than for soybeans, other than our call for a quarterly top, which would be due in the last quarter of this year. It may have occurred one quarter early. That's quite possible with this decline, but we'll talk about that. This is something we gave out several months ago, but looking at the quarterly top for the last quarter of this year, which would normally end this larger advance, and then you could, you know, whether you're trading futures or options, you could put a nice trade together based off that. So, Duane, I'll plan on, unless you have anything you want to add to any of that, I'll plan on seeing you tomorrow. Thank you guys for your attention today, and we'll be back tomorrow and see what we can do.
David, that sounds real good. We'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, buddy. Thanks very much. See you then.
Have a great afternoon.
You too. Bye-bye.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true,
alright guys, that's gonna pretty much wrap it up for us. Now, there was a song, it was in the 80s, by Michael Jackson, Man in the Mirror. I'm not gonna play it right now because something's wrong with my player over here, but anyway, I'm pretty sure there's few people in the audience who is not familiar with the song. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. You know, it's a powerful song. And now I want to say this about the current. We've got a presidential election coming, and we've had 4 years of an administration that many people are very unhappy with. And you know, stuff does roll downhill, and things do trickle down. Believe it or not, it does. Call it gravity, call it whatever you want. I mean, it's just a fact, and you can deny it too. I mean, but it doesn't change the fact. Now, we all know, no matter which side of the aisle you sit on, that the current president has very much embraced the blame game since taking office. And before you get carried away, you think you know where I'm headed with this conversation, but I promise you, you don't. You don't know where I'm headed with this, okay? So, don't hang up on me just yet. The president has said it's George Bush's fault, it's this other person's fault, it's their fault. It's everybody's fault but his own, okay? He has a failure to take, to accept responsibility for his actions. Okay, fair enough. Now you're thinking, oh, see, I knew that's where you were going. No, that's not where I'm going. Where I'm going is that stuff does roll downhill, and I believe that the leader of this country has infected the people of this country. Because the very people who are accusing the president of playing the blame game, those very people are themselves so caught up in the blame game that they can't even see the light of day anymore. Oh, I'm not going to open a business. Oh, I'm not going to hire any people. Because the big bad government might come take away my money. That's ridiculous. Okay? There are people who have opened, there are entrepreneurs, there are people who have, despite the current economic climate, despite a government, okay, who may not have the same economic views that you have, despite that, there are brave men and women Jay, who have put it all on the line and have, despite everything, said, you know what? This is America. I can still have an entrepreneurial spirit. I can at least go down swinging. Okay? And so, throughout all of this, there are people who have done okay. And I want to say that no matter who gets elected in this election, whether it's President Obama reelected or Mr. Romney gets elected, people are going to have to start accepting responsibility for their own actions. Okay? Just because Mitt Romney takes office, it's no magical panacea that suddenly everybody's going to be flush with cash just because this man knows how to run a business. Okay? And just because the current president has some socialistic leanings doesn't mean that everyone should live their life in fear. Okay? Businessmen should still be businessmen. Here's where the problem lies. Okay? Number one, again, stuff rolls downhill. This current administration has the very people who are accusing the president of playing the blame game are themselves guilty of playing the blame game. Oh, I'm not going to do this or I'm not going to do that because, you know, the big bad government, they might come and just take some of my money. Well, you know what? So what? What if they do? Life's short. Live hard. Go for it. Take a chance. The heck with them. Is that how you want to live your life? You want to live your life in fear? I don't think so. I don't think anyone wants to. But yet it happens to all of us. So I encourage each and every one of you to stop blaming the president. Stop blaming Congress. Stop blaming the current administration. Stop blaming your neighbor. Stop blaming the tax man. Get up and do something. Just do something. Do something. Whatever it is. Your hopes, your dreams, that plan you had, that thing you wanted to do, do it. Oh, but you know, it's really uncertain and, you know, they might raise... Okay. So if they raise the taxes, then you're going to have to work some extra hours or whatever it is you got to do to pay the taxes. Oh, yeah, but I might have to get my employees health care. Okay, so get them health care. Well, the proudest days of my life was the day that I was able to give my employees health care. It was a wonderful thing. It was a group of people who had never had health care, except as part of the Arizona penal system, never had health care, or maybe they were on access and had the welfare health care kind of a thing. That was a great day. Did it cost a ton of money? Yeah, it did. It was very expensive. Those people and their lives, that was so much more important. The fact that they could now, you know, walk into a doctor's office with their head held high and that they could get quality medical care and not have to be worried. Their children could get sick and they could actually have the peace of mind knowing that they could take them to the doctor. And it was a proud moment, okay? I'm not bragging. I'm humbled and honored that God allowed me to experience that. But I would have never been able to experience that if I had been sitting on my couch bound in fear. So, whoever's in office, we're always going to have some kind of disagreement with whoever they are. Whoever our boss is, we're going to have a disagreement with them. Whoever our neighbor is, there's going to be issues. Okay? I'm just saying that, you know, how long can you sit around and complain and not just say, you know what, I'm tired of complaining. I'm just going to do something. Win, lose, or draw. I'm going to do something. So that's my piece, okay? I'm tired of the complaining, tired of the blaming. I just want to see some people take action. Go open a business. Go hire some people. If you're concerned about people being on unemployment and you're concerned about people being on food stamps, then use the mind that God gave you to go open a business and create some jobs. You're only one person. I don't know how big your vision is. Maybe you can only hire 10 people. Maybe you can only hire 2. Maybe you can hire 10,000. I don't know. But that will be 2 or 10,000 that comes off welfare, comes off food stamps, can have some self-esteem, can know that they can now take care of their family, can provide for their family, have insurance and the other things that go with the dignity of a job and a paycheck. If you're empowered, shame on you for not empowering someone else. Shame on you. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.